It's Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. Protests are occurring in Japan as its government announces plans to dump radioactive water from the crippled Fukushima nuclear plant into the Pacific Ocean. However, Godzilla wrote an op-ed piece in favor of it. Using information from a Politico article, Texas Senator John Cornyn attacked Joe Biden for not doing cable news interviews, only using his Twitter to relay conventional information and sticking to the script in public comments. Hey, Biden's also not playing golf twice a week, using the presidency to enrich himself, or colluding with Russia. So you can totally see why Republicans might be concerned. A new study says that climate change is causing people living on both U.S. coasts to move to the Midwest. This makes a lot of sense, as most of the middle Americans don't believe in climate change, so it must not be happening there. Wide receiver Julian Edelman announced his retirement from football after 12 seasons with the New England Patriots. So in about a month, expect the announcement that he'll be joining the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Moviegoers in Los Angeles are sad today after the announcement that ArcLight Cinemas and its historic Cinerama Dome are closing their doors permanently due to the pandemic. Thankfully for Angelenos, there's still more spaces they could overpay for something that they can get much cheaper elsewhere. Netflix is indefinitely postponing their release of the documentary Diana, the Interview That Shook the World, in response to Prince Philip's death. Because if the streaming platform that produces The Crown is known for anything, it's respecting the royal family's feelings. Joe Biden will join the Obamas for NBC's Roll Up Your Sleeves vaccination special with Lin-Manuel Miranda. Other guests are likely to be added since, like the protagonist of Miranda's musical Hamilton, they're not throwing away their shot. Jennifer Aniston denied rumors from European news sources that during the Friends reunion special, she said that she was in the process of adopting a child. There must have been something lost in translation, since adopting babies is the hobby of Brad Pitt's other ex. Last night, American Idol fans were shocked when standout singer Wyatt Pike quit the competition despite making it into the final 12. Although it surprised many, given American Idol's track record, it's refreshing to see a singer accept so early on that his career isn't going anywhere. Olivia Wilde received a restraining order against a man who was allegedly stalking her and ex Jason Sudeikis. We wonder if Olivia is just trying to find someone much younger and more interesting to stalk her and her new boyfriend, Harry Styles. Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. I want to start with you, Jason, since we haven't seen you in so long. How are you doing?
I'm good. Nice to see everyone again. Yeah, it's been a while. Glad to be here, though.
Oh, glad to have you on the panel tonight. Pete.
I'm also happy to see Jason. He's as pretty as I remember him being.
Oh. Gonna make me blush on Zoom. Stop.
Elizabeth.
Hello, there's a change.org petition to try to save the Cinerama Dome, if anyone's interested.
Mm-hmm. Are you happy to see Jason?
I don't know him that well. I'm so sorry.
Well, good to see nobody. I'll be seeing you again. You guys have a good night.
I'm so sorry. I know
everyone has to love Jason.
I mean,
to be honest, sure. I love Jason.
I do. I just don't know.
Joe,
sorry. Hi, everyone listening on Google Podcast, and a very, very, very happy National Peach Cobbler Day. I am not happy to see Jason because I like to be the most handsomest guy by like a really huge margin. And he closes that gap. I'm still the most handsomest guy here. And he closes the gap. So I'm really not that happy.
I understand.
Don't hate, Joe. Don't hate. Danny.
Hello, everybody. And baby watches over. My niece had her baby around 3:30 this morning, and we've been up since then. But, you know, baby and mom are doing great. So welcome to this world and to our crazy family, Aaliyah.
So does that make you a great uncle?
Great uncle. Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
well, and the only happier thing than that is I actually get to meet Jason today, you know, so that literally is the highlight of
Jason,
my day.
Danny, Jason.
Close. It's a long story. So, Danny, how is this day so far?
It's been fire.
There you go.
There you go.
Picked it up this time.
Okay, well, let's start tonight's show. We're starting tonight with one of our favorite new segments, This Week in Gossip, in which we've gone through all of the major gossip websites and pulled some of the biggest stories of the week. None of which we verified, though, to be true. I'll tell you the story, and you could either tell us what you know about it, or you could just comment on it. Oh, the first story. I just love this. Usher supposedly tipped dancers at a Las Vegas strip club with fake dollars with his face on them. Ah. Let's start with you.
It's definitely true because I have a picture of the money on the screen. It's clearly true.
So it's not real money then?
Well, no, it's not real money. But apparently, like one of the strippers came out and said, no, he gave us real money too, but he did give us fake money with his picture on it. That's really as well.
Funny. I love that. That's hilarious. Joe?
Is this an old story? Because Vegas strip clubs aren't open yet because of COVID. So
well, apparently this one was because it's not, it does. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's an old story, but it's just coming up now.
Show.
And is there something that the strippers can like trade Ush bucks for?
And you know, the only reason why I was wondering if it may not be an old story is because before giving women fake money, he was giving them herpes. So I don't really know if this is the same.
It was herpes with his face on it though.
Yeah. Speaking of fire.
Yeah.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's true. I actually don't know a ton about the story, but it does remind me that maybe he like, yeah, like it's like tokens and you can cash them in for something. I got to go to the Magic Mike live show in Vegas, and they give you paper, like I called them fun bucks that you could just chuck at the dudes so that you didn't have to have ones and stuff like that. I don't know if that like they included the theoretical tips within the salary for the dancers. I hope they did. But it was pretty fun to just do the, you know, making it rain with like paper money and not have to worry about like, oh, I'm blowing so much cash and I've only been here like an hour.
Okay.
No, the only thing though I was going to say, hold on, Elizabeth, was it herpes or was it Hep C that he was giving women?
I think it was just herpes. I think he was giving them Hep C.
Yeah,
you wrote a sketch about it, Pete. It was herpes.
Oh, it was herpes. I can't remember half the time. But the one thing I do have to say about it though is this is probably what happens when you haven't had a hit single in a few years and you have to make sure people still remember who you are. You have to print your own money, I guess. Trump will be doing this in about a month.
Books.
Danny, and then I'll go to Jason. Go ahead, Danny.
I don't know what's worse, giving them fake money or when the Jersey Shore gang went to a strip club and Snooki was on her knees grabbing all the dollars and putting them in her purse. Mm-hmm. She was stealing the money from the strippers.
No, the fake dollars are worse.
Yeah, I would say the fake money's probably.
Yeah, because at least you could like beat up Snooki and get your money back.
True. Jason.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with the story, but you know, if this happened during COVID and you know the strip clubs weren't allowed to open, then you know, serves you right. You went on the slide, you got screwed with fake money. Two, you know, number one, when like Elizabeth was talking, I pictured like turning in, I don't know, Usher bucks, like. Like skee ball tickets, you know, and getting like an eraser, you know what I mean?
But like you can only get his music
or a slinky. You get one of those slinkies.
but like the plastic one, like not even like a really good, you know, metal one. But
the
then
one
like
Halloween spider ring,
right? But like, what if there's like only a limited number of Usher bucks? Then it's like an NFT, like a non fungible thing, and actually starts to have value. to be traded for things. So they could come out winners.
It's like, wow, look, I got enough for the Confessions remix album.
I mean, I have some of the fake Weird Al money that he blows out during like his concerts, but that's Weird Al money. I keep that. I'm not
trading that in for anything.
Oh, right, no.
Yeah.
Especially if you had the strip for it, right, Joe?
I did not have the strip for it, no. I was very lucky.
Okay. So Dr. Oz is feuding with Ken Jennings over who will be the next Jeopardy host. Any thoughts on that? Elizabeth?
The answer is neither of them get to be hosts. It should be LeVar Burton. Yes! Everybody knows it. We've known it since dear Alex Trebek passed on to the next world. It belongs to LeVar Burton. We all know it. Ken Jennings is not that great a host. And I can say that now because I won my freaking money from him. Oh, wait, they didn't send me the check. Shit. Okay, I take it back. Ken Jennings is fine, but...
It already aired, so you're fine.
That's true. Dr. Oz, not that great. Did anyone see Aaron Rodgers host? Oh, my God. Robot. Oh, my God. Terrible.
No, the way the contestants were like, smarter than him was hilarious.
Yeah, no, it just makes the most sense. And I think LeVar Burton has been doing some stuff with Reading Rainbow still, like in a online only capacity. But
petition two out for him to be the host.
I believe there is.
Did he start that petition, or did fans start the petition?
Fans did, but he's like, hey, I'm not going to fight it if people want to suggest me.
I have a question about the story. Who's Ken Jennings? I don't know.
He's the guy who won the most, not the most money, but the most, like, the longest streak.
Longest streak, yeah.
In Jeopardy history, yeah.
Okay. Maybe I should have looked that up before. Okay, thank you for that. Who wanted to say something? Sorry, Joe.
Also, like, Dr. Oz is cheesy to me. Like, first of all, he gets caught up in a lot of, like, scam medical stuff and whatnot, and... He's creepy to me.
The ratings
I gotta agree.
LeVar ratings Burton, went down the week Dr. Oz hosted.
Yeah, Dr. Oz is horrible. But LeVar Burton, that's the guy that I want to see there too. He's been teaching your kids for years and years and years and years, and now they've grown up and gotten really smart. Come on, let's keep going. You know what I mean? And then have him wear his like Jordy visor and stuff like that. That would be really
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Agreed.
Pete.
See, I don't know if either one of them would be a good host, but I think it would make for one heck of a horrible fight to the death if they should make it. Like, I would just love to see the two of them, you know, in an arena. You know, they could use weapons, hand things, like, you know, nunchucks and bats. But you know, the good note is that, like, maybe somehow or another we lose Dr. Oz in the process. But, Wasn't he like a COVID denier at one point, like earlier this past year?
Yeah, a lot of controversy.
Yeah.
You can't trust someone with medical advice, a doctor. Why would we trust him on Jeopardy?
He was trying to sell weight loss coffee on a show. Weight loss coffee. He's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Or was. I don't know.
First, did he think that he would actually like be able to replace the Alex Trebek? Dr. Oz. You know what I mean? Like, he must really think of himself like very highly of himself. Because I don't see that at all.
Yeah, fuck him. Let's just say it. Let's fuck him.
I mean, I'd rather have Ozzy Osbourne than Dr. Oz.
Absolutely.
Fuck Dr. Oz and his stethoscope.
Okay, but wait a minute. Elizabeth met Ken Jennings. Could Ken Jennings take Dr. Oz, do you think, in a fight?
I mean, they're both, like, on the smaller side, so I think they're both scrappers.
It would take a long time for either one of them to kill the other one, I think.
Yeah, I get that feeling that it's a lot of, like, hanging back and, like, waiting and, like, maybe striking. And it's going to take a while.
So what if you wrap gauze around their hands and put some, like adhesive on it and made them stick it in broken glass? Does that change your...
Kickboxer style, sure.
Yeah.
Damn.
I think
I'm picturing freaking Hot Shots Part 2.
There will be an inordinate amount of bitch slaps in that fight.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's throwing punches. I think there's a lot of slapping.
But yeah, you put them against each other in a game of full contact Jeopardy to the death. I mean, Ken Jennings is going to take him. But will Dr. Oz be like good enough on the fly to stanch all the bleeding? That's entertainment.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
No, but Jenny's got him on the attrition part, so I think Jenny's can outlast the attrition.
Oh, for sure. And we'll see what, you know, kind of shape Jennings
is. Yeah. You know, because before the fight, Ken Jennings is going to look up everything that he needs to know about, like, Greco wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, about, like, any kind of form of fist fighting. He'll know all of it. He might not be able to actually do any of it, but he'll know.
If this fight does happen, can we have Snoop Dogg be one of the commentators?
But isn't that the case for everything, though, Joe? Shouldn't Snoop Dogg commentate on just
pretty much, yes.
He should do the news at night. The news would have lasted 4 years if Snoop Dogg had done the news. We'd have been okay with Trump.
He's doing everything.
I don't know about that.
Snoop is doing everything. He's going to be the mentor on The Voice next week.
Oh, is he really?
Mm-hmm.
Are they doing a rap thing? Like,
as I say, how did
he become a mentor?
No, it's the battle rounds, and he's going to be the. I know Taylor Swift was the battle rounds coach one time. This time it's going to be Snoop.
Great.
Different perspective.
Are they going to be rapping?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's that all ladies. You can just have me and Pete be vocal coaches then.
So let's move on to Jennifer Aniston.
Yes.
Not for her, are saying rumors that she adopted a baby from Mexico are false and never happened. So, any thoughts on that story, Elizabeth?
It's just the age old, she's baby crazy and lonely and needs a baby because you are not complete as a woman unless you are in service to others, either as a wife or mother or both. She has to have a baby. She must have a baby. No, she doesn't want to, and that's fine.
Okay, Pete, and then I'll go to Joe.
See, I'm totally thinking that this is like promotion for the Friends reunion. I mean, not that they really needed it. You know, I mean, maybe like people are still like excited about it, but it was supposed to happen a year ago. So maybe like they have to restart the engine, get people excited again. So, oh yeah, she might mention that she's going to adopt a kid from Mexico. Wow. Now I want to watch.
Because they don't have any, they all get along. There's no like feud. It's not like Sex and the City. There's no feud that's like holding things
up. Yeah, 20 Cots are like best friends.
They're like BFFs, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I don't think that people have lost interest in that, Pete, like you said, because Friends fans are pretty hardcore, I think. Yeah. But they're going to be excited whether it's happening, you know, this month or in a year. So, but I do think it's definitely some publicity. That, oh, let's get her out there for a little bit and let's just kind of say this and see what happens. Joe.
Jen, you know, you don't need to have a kid. Call me. I've got a nice cat. We can go hang out. If you want to go around the world and then tell people you're trying to adopt a kid, but we're really not, just kind of hanging out at the beach or whatnot. But I mean, let's do it. I mean, a kid's just going to weigh things down. You know, without a kid, we can go pretty much anywhere, Jen. So call me.
Joe's head is pretty much like a newborn, so it's perfect.
Yeah, pretty much. You could pretty much stick a Huggies right on top there if you want.
All right.
It's not too much. It's not too much suit long until you be shitting in a diaper, so that's good.
Okay, well, that's a really good point. Now let's move on to the next. Okay, so according to his former stylist, Justin Timberlake set up Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction at the 2004 Super Bowl to top Britney's VMA's Kiss with Madonna and Christina Aguilera. Like, the fact that they're still talking about this when everybody knows it was staged, that everybody knows that, you know, he didn't suffer any consequences about, you know, it was all on Janet. Like, why are people still talking about this? I don't get that. Danny.
Because he probably has a new album coming out. So let's start the publicity.
Well, no, actually, you know, Veronica kind of hit the nail on the head in a sense. That's exactly what his people are saying. Like, if this was a true story, why didn't this publicist come out with it, you know, 15 years ago? So that's their argument. They're saying it's not true, that this was a complete mistake and that he had nothing to do with it. But I think it's more about the guys trying to say, it was Justin Timberlake's idea, and look at how badly it went for Janet Jackson instead.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth?
I mean, in all fairness to the stylist, I'm sure they probably didn't, you know, maybe they felt they couldn't speak out at the time, but I think Danny's right. Justin's got to have something in the works, film or an album or something, because that's what he does with these stories, is somehow they get back in the news right around the same time. He's got something coming out, whether it's Janet or Britney. He's always clawing his way back to the public eye on the backs of those two ladies. Mm-hmm. And fuck him.
Joe.
You know, I don't know why we didn't pick this. Maybe we did, and it's one of the upcoming bits on this segment. But just to show, because Justin Timberlake's partner, because I don't think they're married, it's Jessica Biel. I don't think that they're married, though, right? I think they're just...
I think they're married.
Are they married?
They've been married.
Yes, they are. They're married, married? I thought they were just partners. But anyway, she had to come out and say that she's not going to name her baby Batmo.
Name their baby
because
what?
Because make the kid Batmobile.
Yeah, they were married in 2012.
Okay. Oh. Right, but that was like a whole rumor that you're going to name the kid Batmobile.
I was like, Batmo Timberlake.
Yeah.
Elizabeth and I were confused. I'm like,
but that was actually a press release that the kid wasn't going to be named Batmo. So I figured, yeah, you're right. There's probably an album coming out. And on the other thing, listen, Janet Jackson wasn't like backstage going, you know, no one's going to see it, so I'm going to wear this 5-pound nipple ring. Because she had that gigantic, like, sun thing. It's just like, yeah, no one's going to see it. I'm going to put this on, you know? And then Justin Timberlake's like, no, that didn't happen, guys. Sorry.
So another gossip story, I should say, not news story, is that Dolly Parton supposedly is selling ice cream on eBay for $1,000 per pint.
No, she's not. It's being sold.
Oh, it's being sold. Yeah, okay.
That would change the whole trajectory of the story if it was
okay.
Sold.
But Dolly, so
it's like, what a bitch, Dolly Parton.
Yeah, I was like, okay. She's been so good so far. This is where she finally trips right at the finish line.
My mistake. Okay, sorry, Dolly. Elizabeth.
First of all, how dare you? And second of all, you can list anything on eBay for any price you want. It doesn't mean people are going to buy it for that amount. What is it? It's just Dolly Parton flavor.
It's strawberry pretzel pie.
Flavored ice cream.
It's called strawberry pretzel pie.
Tastes like Grand Old Opry.
It's from our favorite. Isn't it the same brand as our favorite ice cream?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, Jenny's ice cream.
So this is an ice cream that Dolly Parton made.
I think she created it.
Right, like created the flavor. Yeah, I think people, it's just, you know.
I think that this is kind of like, because if scammers. She was going to create a flavor of ice cream, I would think that she'd want to like sell it at the park instead of like having someone try and sell it on eBay. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I mean, she's got this whole Dolly, you know, she's got a whole theme park. That sounds like a really great ice cream. I'd go there for the ice cream. So,
if you've never tried Jenny's ice cream, you have to try it at least once. It is so
Ken Jennings has ice cream too. He doesn't need to be hosting Jeopardy. He's got ice cream. Fuck that guy. Call LeVar Burton.
Well, everybody's getting fucked tonight on the show.
Yeah.
Well, we're really
losing that family audience, aren't we?
So Lisa Rinna says Scott Disick is too friggin' old to date her daughter Amelia. Like, that's what she's concerned about is his age, not the fact that he's, like, an utter douchebag and he's dating her daughter. What are your thoughts on this story? When it comes to these people, I think
the age is all part and parcel of him being a douche. Because he's in his 30s going after this, 19, 20-year-old? How old is
she? She just turned 19.
Oh, he's
19?
So
okay,
literally.
Yeah.
She was 18 while they were already dating.
Yeah, so I think that's maybe her public way of being like, get away from my daughter, you creep. But, you know, it's a 20-year age difference. Like, what the hell? It's gross.
And he was with a Kardashian. Enough said. That's just gross. Pete, and then I'll go to Joe.
Well, I mean, I think when you really kind of look at the story for what it is, what woman above 19 would date Scott Disick? I mean, this guy seems like the biggest douchebag on earth. And you know what? And it's like there's this old wives' tale that women, when they're young, date bad boys so they can find out all the things they don't want in a man, so that when they get a little bit older, they can find a man that they do want. So Scott Disick is notching up on the bedpost on all the things women don't want as men. Like he's
a bedpost, it's a toothpick.
Yeah, he's apparently this generation's Scott Baio. I guess if your name is Scott, you could just bang anybody in Hollywood until a certain point when you just, I mean, but the only difference is Scott Baio actually used to have a career. Scott Disick has a career as being Scott Disick, which, mm-hmm. and I don't even, if Scott Disick was sitting in the room with me right now, other than I'd say to him, what the fuck are you doing in my house? I still wouldn't know it was Scott Disick.
I believe he's Lord Disick as well. I don't know where that came from. Disick. I can never remember.
So the douche-o-meter just went up.
A bit. No, it broke.
Joe.
So Scott Disick is right now the age that Lisa Rinna was when she had her daughter. So yeah, it's a little bit of an age difference issue, I think. But, you know, but hey, you know, Scott Disick is going to be Scott Disick, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't be happy about it either. I'm sure Lisa Rinna might have one or two phone calls that she can make from back home that can maybe have Scott Disick like dragged into an alley and beaten up.
And you know what? To be fair though, if Scott Disick woke up tomorrow morning and decided to start dating Helen Mirren, we'd be talking about that just as well. There really is no in between. Like it doesn't matter wherever he spreads his seed, that's going to be a ground that nobody's going to want to plant on.
That would be very confusing for sure. Mm-hmm.
So is Olivia Wilde still living with ex Jason Sudeikis while dating Harry Styles? For the sake of the kids, maybe? I mean, a lot of, you know, parents like will co-parent like that. What do you think, Pete?
I actually got to the bottom of the story because that's the kind of guy I am. No, yesterday she was in court to get a restraining order against this guy that was stalking her and Jason Sudeikis, although I assume he was really stalking her because look at Jason Sudeikis.
I think he's cute.
He's a handsome so man, but he's not like, you know, if a guy is going to stalk another guy, it's probably not Jason Sudeikis, though.
I don't know. People are crazy.
But he has a type.
Yeah,
maybe. Okay, so I'm wrong. I don't know who he was stalking. So in court, she apparently lied to the judge and said that she was still living with Jason Sudeikis so that she could get the restraining order for both of them. And so somebody picked up on the court transcript, saw that and said, oh my God, she's dating Harry Styles and Jason Sudeikis is now starring in the worst cuckold film ever. And so they had to come out today with a press release saying, no, they're not living together anymore.
Listen, Jason Sudeikis is the second best looking Jason right now. So
oh, I was just gonna
this is
ask
where you're supposed to jump in, Jason.
There's your moment, Jason.
I need clarification. I don't know who we're talking about.
I was like, who? Well, who's the first Jason?
Oh, yeah, me too. I was like,
I'm thinking that too.
I went with Priestley. I'm sorry.
That's where I was going. Totally.
They said Statham, and then I remembered Momoa, so.
I'm still going with Priestley. I'm old school.
So our last gossip story is about Chevy Chase. So according to the gossip world, he only has 6 months to live due to Parkinson's disease. If that's true, that's really sad. Because I'm a fan of Chevy Chase, though. Really sad. Pete.
Well, if you believe any of the stories about Chevy Chase, and I actually met two people who told me this about him, that he's just the biggest prick on the face of the earth.
I've heard
there's
that.
Probably going to be an awful lot of people that'll go to the funeral just to make sure he's actually dead, you know, which is sad because he is really a fairly talented man. But yeah, they say he's a miserable motherfucker. So if he has I can only imagine what the nurse who's dealing with that would have to go through. You know,
yeah,
especially when he was doing well.
I know somebody who worked on set with him once, and I pretty much heard the same thing too. And it was kind of disappointing because I've always been a fan of his. So it kind of sucks when you hear that stuff about someone that you admire. Joe?
Well, I mean, it's true that Chevy Chase always makes the wrong career move. So, I mean, it kind of fits. Trivia real quick, see if anyone can answer this one. What is Chevy Chase's highest grossing movie?
Three Amigos?
Nope.
Vegas Vacation.
Nope.
Spies
not
Like
foul,
Us?
No, not Foul Play.
Nope.
Just Regular Vacation?
Nope.
That one where he's an invisible man?
Nope.
What?
Believe it or not, his highest grossing movie is Snow Day.
Oh, that kids movie from
Jonathan Taylor Thomas, because all the kids went to see Jonathan Taylor Thomas instead of him, and that's why it is his highest grossing movie.
Right.
But Joe, I have to ask you a question. Are you saying that getting Parkinson's is a career move on his part?
No, I'm saying that he made some sort of bad decision that ended up giving him Parkinson's. Okay. Because he never makes a good decision.
Okay.
He rarely ever makes a good decision when it comes to the career stuff, you know. And even when, and what happens is when he's doing something right, he purposely tanks it. He purposely messes it up because, you know, he goes on Community and then he decides to hate everybody there. So, I mean, listen, he's a talented guy, but if he wouldn't let he kept letting his ego get in the way of you know, his talent, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he left Saturday Night Live when he was the biggest star on the show at the time, you know. I mean, great. I mean, great for Bill Murray, opened the door for him. But I mean, like if you follow his career along, he never seems to make the right decision. And when that rare time he does, then for some reason he screws it up. So, you know, I would be really sad if he had Parkinson's and he was going to pass away. I really would. But at the same time, it's like Chevy, man, you got to. I can't say get a break because everything you did was kind of your own fault. I hate to say it.
Some people are just kind of miserable like that. And
maybe that's why he's miserable at this point.
I'll tell you, it would do wonders for his career if he died, though. I mean, because then we'd have to go back and reevaluate if he was a genius or not. And somebody will say he is. You know, it's only because that's how it all works. Like you know, I'm sure there was somebody who said, you know what, Hitler, not such a great guy, but man, what a painter. You know, and listen, Bill Murray is considered to be one of the most mild mannered people in Hollywood, and he nearly knocked him out backstage at Saturday Night Live once. And so, if you could piss off Bill Murray,
just at Saturday Night Live, a few times, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I'm just talking about there was the one incident actually at Saturday Night Live where he punched him in the face.
But so, even if you see interviews with him, he just does not look like a happy person. And like Elizabeth said, you know, sometimes people will just self-sabotage because they're not happy. And it's really sad, you know, when you have so much talent and you just, you know.
Yeah, for whatever reason, he can only operate in miserable mode and cannot, like, accept happiness and success. Yeah, and some people are like that.
He was never the same when his best friend fell off a cliff in Hawaii. And so, I mean, ever since then, he hasn't been.
Oh, I didn't know that happened. Happy.
What?
I didn't know.
I thought this was a bit.
Yeah, one of the founders.
Mobile, Alabama.
His absolute best friend was one of the founders of National Lampoon.
Oh, right.
And he died. Yeah, he actually died.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, at the same time, he's been married to the same woman for like 50 years. So, you know, so there is. Yeah,
he has to find someone who wants to live with his miserable.
Yeah, I know, but like still, so he's all that bad. You know,
she lives with him every day. So hey, I mean, it's like I'm really not going to get something better than this.
I mean, maybe he's only nice to her. Icon?
What did you say, Jason?
Like, would you all consider him a comedic icon?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Maybe not personally exactly, like, as someone I model anything after, but objectively, without a doubt, yeah.
You know, I think you have to look at all those people that came out of the first wave of Saturday Night Live as comedic icons, and even the ones that weren't as successful, you know, after the show, because that era kind of created all the comedians that we were going to see probably for the next 30 years in television and film. Like, so I think anybody who came out of that time period, they're all icons, I guess.
Yeah, Lorraine Newman's book just came out. I'm excited to read that one. So, she's got a lot of good SNL stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's move on now to our main story tonight. With so much loss and change experienced by everyone over the last year, it's actually really interesting to see the outpouring of grief coming from people in Los Angeles after movie theater chain Pacific Theaters announced that it was shutting down all of its theaters, including LA's premier multiplex, ArcLight Hollywood, and the famed Cinerama Dome. We thought we'd talk about it tonight and see what it is about those theaters that mean so much to the people of LA and what changes our panel thinks moviegoers should expect to see at theaters in the near future, and also what changes we would all like to see. So first, for people that are watching or listening that are outside of Los Angeles, I thought we could first talk about the Cinerama Dome. Can anybody talk about the history of the Dome? who wants to start? Let's start with you, Pete.
Well, again, as I always like to preface, I didn't know this prior to today, so I'm not as smart as I'm going to pretend to be right now. But the Cinerama Dome opened in 1963. It was the first film that they played there was It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World. It was the first theater in the Pacific Theaters chain, and originally the owner of the chain wanted to make all the theaters look just like the Cinerama Dome until they realized how much it cost, and then they abandoned the idea. It's also the largest concrete dome structure in the all concrete dome structure in the entire world. In case anybody didn't know that, those are the facts. It's actually, it's never changed hands. And when, and just by chance, when ArcLight became available for a purchase, Pacific bought it and they just kind of integrated the two together.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody want to add anything about the history of the Dover? Joe, did you had your hand up too?
I was going to mention that it was actually specifically built for It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. They had to rush it to get it done on time for that. It was not, everyone always says it was the first cineramic movie theater in Los Angeles. It wasn't, actually. There was one on Hollywood Boulevard before that. And that one actually ended up playing 2001 A Space Odyssey for, I think, 2 years in Cinerama. That one was on Wilcox in Hollywood, was originally the RKO one that they redid for that. But Cinerama Dome was built specifically for a style of movie called Cinerama, which is a multi-camera movie experience. There were a couple of other movies that were filmed in it, How the West Was Won and whatnot, that still has all of the Cinerama cameras stuff in it. And every now and then they do actually play some Cinerama movies. When the TCM Film Festival comes to LA every year, they usually have a Cinerama movie in there. And I gotta say, watching a regular movie in it is okay. But getting to actually watch a Cinerama movie in the Cinerama Dome is a pretty amazing experience, because mm-hmm. it's basically projecting around the walls as you go. So it's like this big kind of curved projection thing. So you can turn to your right and see the movie and turn to your left and see the movie. It's pretty amazing.
So that was actually my next question to you guys. So all of you have seen a movie there, right? Is there anybody who has not seen a movie in the set? So what was your experience like? I know Joe just talked about, you know, like, how the image projects itself. And it's funny because the last time Pete and I were at the Cinerama, Elizabeth was there too. Okay. And we watched.
We want to forget that.
Movies we've ever seen.
I mean, that's not the Cinerama story I'm going to tell. I'm going to tell
you. I know. But I was, you know, I kind of want to start this because I was telling Pete, you know, I was so upset when I heard about this because the very first movie I ever went to, I was 5 years old and I went to go see E.T. and it was there at the Cinerama. Today, I actually Googled because I was talking to my mom about it. And she says, I remember when we went to go see E.T., we had to stand in these long lines because we couldn't get tickets for like the next showing. So I think we got tickets for like the later night showing, but we had to stand in line. So today, I just for the heck of it, I Googled, you know, E.T. Cinerama, you know, 1982. And there was a picture that I found. I sent it to Pete. And I was like, look at this, because that's what I remember. My very first experience at a movie theater at 5 years old was watching E.T.
It's actually on the screen right now.
Are you posting it? Oh, so yes. That's so cool. So that to me, like, is such a special moment because I was like, whoa, this is amazing. What an experience this is. And for me, like, you know, we saw all like the major movies, we would see them there, you know, like the Back to the Future movies, we would go see them there. So all the big, you know, blockbuster movies and birthdays and things like that, you know, we would spend it there. So it's I'm very sad to see it close. Danny.
That was right. Like, it's such a different feel when you're watching the movie at an angle like that, you know, where it's all around. I also remember my first experience there, and it was for Terminator 2. And same thing. We bought the tickets, but I remember my friend's dad had to buy the tickets that morning because the movie was so popular. And when we got there, we also had to wait in a long line just to get in, you know, and it was just such a great movie experience. You know, the anticipation of going in, even though some idiot, you know, drove by after the showing prior to us and said, he dies at the end, you know, we're like, you saw everybody in line just like freeze and be mad, but you didn't care. You know, you were in for a spectacular, you know, experience. And it was, you know, and I'm just going to miss the Saturday matinees, you know, being able to go and just watch movies that nobody else wanted to see. But, you know, again, I'll say like I did yesterday, they have the best popcorn there. Okay. And I'm just kind of sad because AMC popcorn sucks and I don't know where to go now. But I know that'll be a topic later on. But yeah, great experience.
You know, when you said the concessions about the popcorn too, I also remember that next to the concessions, they were selling like stuffed animals of E.T. and I got one. So again, it just like triggered my memory right now when you said the popcorn. So popcorn and my stuffed animal of E.T. Joe.
The ArcLight as a whole, I think another reason why there were so many memories of like that, the Hollywood ArcLight in particular, was the theater that you could see stars going to the movies. You would see filmmakers, you know? That's where directors and writers and all, because the experience was so wonderful. The Cinerama Dome aside, there's 14 theaters in there, and they're really, really built. The way that they're built, there is no bad seat. Even the two front rows, there's such a distance between the screen and whatnot that even if you sat in the two front rows, you got a really great experience in the movie. And, you know, once the movie started, they don't let people in, so there's no one like getting in your way and things like that. They were always, it was the spiel that the guy used to say, you know, checking for sound, something like that. You know, that was just one of the most amazing things ever. And then you would see, like, I can tell you, all sorts of different stars and people like that. Seeing James Gunn there, and we saw Shailene Woodley in a movie once. And all, you know, you see them just kind of go because that was their theater. And it was really interesting to see on Twitter with them talking about that. And then also, like, the premieres there were fantastic, too. And it wasn't just movie premieres. There'd be a lot of TV premieres and whatnot. It was such a it was like one of those places. It's like when you walked in, you were with all these different Hollywood people and all that. But at that moment, everybody was the same. Everybody had to go buy a ticket. You know what I mean? It didn't matter how important you were and stuff like that. Everybody at that moment, you were all equal. You were all cinephiles. You were all movie lovers. And that was one of the fantastic things about it.
I love that you just said that, Joe. That's so true. Like, everybody was just equal there. Right. And then they used to also do, like, the displays of the costumes from, like, movies and
things. Yeah. Wonderful stuff.
They would welcome you, too. Like, when you had a staff member just kind of give you, like, a little intro. It was just kind of nice because it was
And everyone that worked there were movie fans, too. They even had on their name tag, underneath their name, would be what their favorite movie was, which I wouldn't know what to pick. I have so many favorite movies, but... It's like, and so that was like, and the whole idea of that was that, well, when it was slow at the theater, that was a conversation starter, you know? It was like, you'd be buying your popcorn and you know, there would be Phil, the guy handing you the popcorn, but Phil likes Back to the Future. Oh my gosh, you know, stuff like that. So really, really neat place.
Yeah. Elizabeth, and then I'll go to UP. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Well, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun, but maybe I'll hold that answer. I mean, I'm just kind of sad I didn't go to the Cinerama Dome as much to see stuff, because I did have great experiences, you know, some other aside. Probably the best one is seeing Black Panther there, like opening night, because the crowd was into it. It was on that big, huge screen, and everybody was just so excited. Like, even outside, there was like a group of guys who took like a big, adorable, like, group photo together, where they kind of like were dogpiled on each other. It was just like the whole energy of the night was like amazing, and it was all at the movie theater, which is the best. Like, I know you guys are so big on the VR thing and everything. I just still like going to the movies. I'm so sad that we can't go.
Yeah. Although in VR, there's also a Grand Cinema too. Like, that's one of the rooms that you can view movies in.
Yeah.
But, and it's, I know it's not the same experience, but you know, we'll take right now whatever we can. Pete.
See, and I don't know if this will be the same thought that other people have, but for anybody who's not from, you know, not living in Los Angeles or hasn't visited here in the last few years, the street that the Cinerama Dome is on is actually, you know, for movie lovers, it's the greatest street in the world, because if you go a little bit further down, you've got Disney's El Capitan Theater, or actually before that, you have the Egyptian Theater, then you have El Capitan, and then after that, you've got the Chinese Theater, and these are four iconic theaters all within walking distance of each other, and the thing that's really amazing about it is that with the Cinerama Dome, unlike the other three, it never felt as corporate as the other three theaters felt, because mm-hmm. going to you know, like whether you were going to see something at the Egyptian or you're going to see something at the Chinese theater, you knew you were kind of going to this place that was almost like a museum to film in a sense. Like they're, you know, they're showing a movie here, but it's still like it's more important because of what it was to the film world. But then when you go to the Dome, you're going to see the latest movies out on the biggest screen possible. And yeah, like Joe said, you're probably going to see some celebrities mm-hmm. out of it. Cause I remember a couple of times we saw movies, probably even with Joe we saw movies on opening night that I'm sure there were celebrities in because they were in the same, you know, group of people who wanted to see the movie the way we did. And it's just like, it's that feeling of doing it. And the thing with ArcLight as a whole is that whole complex, it is about the fact that, you know, it might be a little more expensive. It might be a little bit stuffier in the sense of, yeah, they won't let you in, you know, after a certain period of time. And like, you kind of have to respect certain things about the theater, but there's clearly like a real love of movies that you do. It's like, to me, it's like the TCM of movie theaters, because mm-hmm. like, you know, like when you're watching TCM, you know, that's a channel that's only for people that like just adore film. And that's what ArcLight is.
Yeah. And Pete, you're right. You know, we actually were in a theater with a couple times of celebrities, but everybody there, no one was like, oh my gosh, I'm wanting to take a picture with them or something like that. Yeah. You may have whispered, oh my gosh, this so-and-so is here, but we let them, you know, they watched with us because, like it says, we were all equals in there. Just because they were a big movie star didn't make a difference at that point. And mm-hmm. I think that's why they like to go there too. Yeah. Because they could just be themselves too. We're all just together.
Like I was saying yesterday off the show, I watched Kevin Spacey have a shit fit outside the doors of the ArcLight. Like he came bursting out. I guess they were doing a screening of his movie Casino Jack, which I guess if I'd been in that movie, I'd been pretty angry too. but he came. I mean, I was about to walk in at the doors. He's the only guy I've ever seen who had to open both doors because he was so angry. Both doors flew open.
About
hey.
Yeah.
And he comes just bounding out of the theater, and behind him is like his handlers, like the people that in your mind you think of are the biggest weasels on earth. Those are the people behind Kevin, you don't understand. And he's just doing this thing with his hands as he's walking past it. It's like, and like in any other part of the world, that's a moment that people are like, holy shit, look.
Yeah.
At the ArcLight, it was just like, oh, look, Kevin Spacey just lost his shit and walked away.
No, I would have saw that. I would have turned to you and I would have went, they must be out of caramel corn.
So, you know, one of the other questions I wanted to ask you guys, which we already kind of talked about, was, you know, what made this theater stand out from other theaters? We kind of already touched upon that, so I'm going to go ahead and move on. But yesterday, also when Pacific Theaters announced that it was closing its theaters, including the ArcLight, like we just talked about, there was an outpouring of emotion. How do you feel about this happening, and why do you think people are feeling so bad about it? I mean, obviously, it's hitting us Angelenos harder than, you know, anybody else, because it's here, it's happening here. But do you think there's any other reasons why people are taking this so hard, besides like memories and things like that? Elizabeth.
Well, I think it's memories. I also was talking to my friend. It was like, it feels like we're so close to, if not getting back to normal, to getting out of like the real shit show, like, you know, element of the pandemic. Like, yeah, maybe you have to wear a mask at the theater, but hey, at least you're back in a movie theater and people are getting vaccinated. It's like, it felt so close. And then and a lot of people said like, oh, you know, the first thing I want to do when I am vaccinated and we get to go back out and do things is I want to go to a movie at the ArcLight. I don't care what movie it is. It could be the re-release of freaking Kangaroo Jack or something. I don't care. I want to go. I want to go to the ArcLight, you know, park there, get my ticket, get the popcorn, do the, you know, have dinner. I've had dinner there. I think their restaurant's actually pretty good, to be honest. I really love their calamari. So it's just, that's why it feels like extra like dagger in the heart, because it's like we were so close and this is a big thing a lot of people in Los Angeles wanted to do because it would make you feel like things were back to normal. Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of ripped away.
Yeah. Danny.
I mean, if I had top five things I wanted to do once pandemic ended, one of them would have been going back to the movies at the Arclight specifically. There's just so many memories. You remember the movies you've seen, the people you've been with. My cousins went to Hollywood High in the 80s. And when I posted it on my Facebook yesterday, they were remembering the times they went. You know, they all worked at the McDonald's around the corner. And so it brought up a lot of memories. And, you know, a lot of it is nostalgia. You know, you, like Elizabeth said, you think you're going back to normal, you know, but then this, you know, happens and that's all you're left now with, memories, yeah. You know, but they're good ones. You know, even if you took someone you're not with anymore to the movies there, you still remember it being a fun experience. So it sucks. And I hope somehow, some way it does get saved.
Mm-hmm. Jason.
I mean, you know, agree with everyone here. Like, it is memories, especially like, you know, I'm from Chicago. So you come here and you see like the unique structure of it, you know, they've got the premieres, they've got, you know, the displays inside. And it was also like one of those unique places. And you'd always see like you all did, like you'd see friends unexpectedly, especially for a premiere. It was almost guaranteed that you're going to run into somebody you knew because that's where you want to go. But it was also like, it was a place that was classy without being stuffy, without being kitschy. You know what I mean? And still casual, but still like a nice place to go to watch a movie. I mean, it's one of the only movie theaters I feel kind of a, you know, an attachment to, like, you know, like Danny was saying, you know, out of the pandemic, I want to go see a movie. First place I think of is Arclight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Joe?
Jason's right, by the way. It has that air, like, it can be casual, but like, that's the place you take a date. You know, you don't take a date to the AMC, you take a date to the Arclight because it's got this nice little air to it. But I think one of the reasons why everyone is on Twitter talking about stuff like that is because this isn't the denizens of Hollywood or LA's fault. Because if the Arclight was open, we would be going there. The reason why I think it hurts even harder is because it was out of our control. It was something like we couldn't save it because if it was open, we would be there, but it just couldn't be open because of COVID. It's like COVID took this from us. And I think that's a big thing too, because, you know, like I said, I think there would be enough people that at least the Hollywood Arclight would have had people in it. However, the different cases is. And I think that's one of the things too. It's like, this was out of our control and that hurts a lot.
This was not the market decided people didn't want to go to the theater. Like, this, yeah, you know,
20 people going there. The place was always packed. Always packed.
And that's a lot of businesses, too. Small ones, big ones, yeah, that were killed by COVID. The market was disrupted by a pandemic, so it didn't decide. Also, don't trust the fucking market.
Pete.
I mean, just to kind of amplify a lot of what everybody else is saying, you know, for people, again, who don't understand, like if there's somebody listening, and I'm sure there is, who can't conceptualize in their head what, you know, why these theaters were special to people like us, it's only because you can't see what they were like. I mean, when you'd walk into the Arclight, into the main theater, the entranceway was probably bigger than most theaters are. You know, and it was, and not only that it was bigger, it was cavernous in the sense because the ceiling was at least 150 feet high. Mm-hmm. And so when you'd walk in, you were almost destined to run into somebody you knew because it constantly was so busy with people. And like anybody else, you'd go to the machine to try and do the tickets, and the ticket machine was always broken. It did not matter how many times you stood there with your card and you swiped it. It was going to screw up the tickets. I actually missed a movie once because it took me so many times to get the tickets done. And then Arclight had that rule about like how late you could buy them.
The one time Pete and I bought the tickets and then we got in there and where there was supposed to be a seat, there wasn't no seat for. Remember that?
Yeah, but it just
didn't exist. That happened to me at the Sherman Oaks one. That's never happened to me at the Hollywood one. I have to say, location matters because people also stole my seats at the Sherman Oaks one time. And they would not move.
But it's like you walked in and you saw this gigantic, and like I said, the atrium where like all the desks were, where they were selling tickets and where the computers were for the like self-serve tickets, was in one area. And then you had the restaurant off to the side, and that was always full of people too. And then you could see the balcony area where the bar was, and you could see the balcony where like the secondary movies were, because from downstairs, everything was like it was an open concept. So above, like you'd see people you knew going up on the elevator, not the escalator, because the escalator was this gigantic long escalator. But again, I think it's again comes back to one thing, and that is like AMC could go in there tomorrow and buy the theater. I mean, if they had the money to do what I'm saying, and it wouldn't be the same experience, because it would be just another Cineplex theater. It'd be just like another one of the multiplexes for them. But with the ArcLight, it almost felt like, and maybe this wasn't true, it felt like they only hired you if you like just mm-hmm. loved movies.
Yeah.
Like if you didn't love movies, they like weren't going to hire you.
For the job that you have to be into movies.
Yeah. This wasn't like teenagers with a summer job just filling in or working part-time. This was like full-time work for people. So that's the other thing that sucks, is all these people are out of jobs now too.
Well, let me ask you this, Pete. I don't know if you know this or not, but why did the theater chain decide to close like right now? Like we're so close to the end of the pandemic, or so we think. Why now?
Well, again, I don't know like for a fact what the reason is. I mean, obviously the pandemic killed the business of all these theaters. But the reality of it is, it's that, you know, it's kind of like by saying we're now reopening everything, that's going to cause a lot of businesses to go out of business. See, like most people think that once things reopen, that it's great. Everybody will be able to go back in and start doing stuff. But think about this. If say you're behind in rent, like you haven't paid rent to the owner of the building you're in, your lease is all screwed up. You haven't been paying your electric bill. You haven't been paying, you know, whatever utilities. All of a sudden now you're being told, okay, tomorrow you could reopen and there might be during the course of your day 10,000 people that'll come through your doors. What if you don't have the money for popcorn? What if you don't have the money to pay staff because you're so back rented on all the money you owe to other people?
Yeah.
And to me, that's probably what it is. I mean, like if you think this is bad now, you'll see like theaters will start closing pretty soon too, because they just cannot, they you know, when they realize now that they can't, that they cannot reopen. It's kind of like, let's say you owned like a cabin in the mountains and you know, you all year round, you haven't gone there, and then you want to go there, but you know, you don't have any money to go pay to get the electricity turned back on. You just can't go. Like, and that's going to be the case with a lot of these places. But I know that what I did read today was that Pacific Theaters didn't go bankrupt. What they basically did was sometime late last year, they went to the landlords of every one of the properties that they had theaters in, and they told them, look, we're giving you back the keys. If you could find somebody else to take this over, fine. We can't take them anymore. Mm-hmm. And so there's a possibility that some of these theaters, they might end up having to keep because the landlords might just say, no, you sign an agreement. You have to do something with it. So, I mean, what's eventually going to happen is they'll file bankruptcy and then they'll go out of business. But in the meantime, they're technically not, they're not out of business is what I'm trying to get at. It's just they don't have control of their own theaters anymore.
Now, I know we've talked about like what we think the future of movie theaters is going to be, but I want to dive in just a little bit deeper. But Joe, let me get your comment and then I want to move on. Go ahead, Joe.
To go by what Peter was saying, as far as if you weren't in LA, like our lovely listeners in South Korea or whatnot, who can't quite grasp what was going on with this particular theater. Because remember, there was other ArcLight theaters. They just weren't as grand as the Hollywood one. Mm-hmm. But when you walked in, there was the huge board, which was telling which movies they were in one section, and a gigantic clock so that you knew when it was. But I mean, picture like, for everyone who's not in the country, something like that, you know, a big city train station or a big mm-hmm. city airport. Because that's kind of what it was like. There really was that sense of community to it. It really did seem like a gathering place. I mean, they had a restaurant and a coffee shop and all that. And I'll tell you, I've gone and eaten at the restaurant when I didn't have a ticket to the movie, because the restaurant was pretty good and met up with people there.
Me too.
So, what?
Me too. I've done that.
Yeah. See, we've all done it.
God, I love the Kelmer.
I can't stress enough. Like, you ran into friends that you weren't expecting to run into. Almost every time you ran into somebody you knew, because that's the kind of community that, like, gathering place that it was, you know. But like Pete says, movies are in trouble. There's three AMCs within walking distance of each other in Burbank. I don't think there's going to be three AMCs within walking distance when we're done. Yeah. So
save the little one. Save the little AMC by the Barnes & Noble. That's the best one.
The movie going has actually been in a fairly steady decline since 2002, when nearly 1.6 billion tickets were sold. For comparison's sake, in 2019, the last year with full movie attendance, just over 1.2 billion tickets were sold. What do you think the decline in people going to the movies is due to? Why was there such a change from that, you know, that figure to the other one? Pete?
Well, I mean, I think it's a lot of things. There was a great report that I think this website, The Numbers, put up that I'm actually going to put up some stuff on the screen. But the decline in people going to the movies is probably tied a lot to the amount of movies that were being released. And the reason why less movies are being released was because the average cost of movies being made was going up so considerably, because the only movies that were making money were blockbusters. Mm-hmm. So the less money you have to spend to make a blockbuster, the less chance you're going to put out new movies. And like the difference in like 2002 to 2019 was about 70 movies. There was like a 70 movie difference of by the major studios. So like that alone, you know, probably led to it. And the problem that they have more than anything else now is that when you take the amount of money that came in from 2002, which again was the high watermark in the last 30 years, the adjusted gross for that period of time was something like $15 billion. Whereas the last year that was the year's world, in 2019, the theaters made a little bit over $11 billion. And they're doing it at diminished returns because now every movie costs $200 million to make. So yeah, that's probably the main reason for it. But also you just, you know, cable TV, you know, even though in the early 2000s it was already there, it didn't have the breadth of programming that it has today. And now you've got the streaming services in the last couple of years that's going to increase the decline even further. But yeah, there's just so many factors to it. But probably the biggest would be the ones I just mentioned.
Don't they also release movies now faster than they did before? Like, aren't they just like in the movie theaters for like a couple of weeks and then you can go... They release them to like a streaming service. See,
like somebody like Joe.
Back in the day, we used to have to wait months.
Yeah, you and I might be the only ones who will remember this, but it used to be that like when a movie left the theater, it ended up on video like 8 months to a year later. Like it wasn't
oh, yeah.
immediate. Yeah. And after it was on video, it was another 6 months before it was on HBO or something.
And not even that, like it went from like the big theater to like what we used to call the dollar theater.
Yeah.
I mean, there was one in North Hollywood. I don't think that one's coming back at all. I think it was $1.75 at this point. But like where the movie went from one theater to like a lower tier theater before it ever went to video. So, and that doesn't really happen anymore. So.
Well, and I also think too, the price of movie tickets, like a family of four, a mom, dad, two kids, or whatever, two dads, two moms. But what I'm trying to say is like you have two adults and two kids. That's like $80 right there. So I think that also has a lot to do with it, too, in my opinion.
But not including tax.
Not including the popcorn and the drinks and everything the kids want, too.
Yeah, and that combined with what, you know, both they were saying is that, like, not only is it super expensive to go to a theater, but you don't have to wait too long before it comes out streaming somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I remember we used to have to wait a year to get, you know, movie on, you know, on DVD or whatever.
And it's not like families don't want to go to the movies. They do. I mean, the drive, when I go to the drive-in, I talk, you know, I keep waxing poetic about it, but there's a good point to it. You can load all the kids up in the car and bring your own snacks and go out there. And every time I'm there, it's full. And half the people that are there with their whole family. Yeah. You know, they're all loaded in. They back in the SUV and open up the back and the kids are sitting in there. And it's a great old time. I mean, there were movies that they were playing Tom and Jerry, which debuted on HBO Max at the same time, but it was full because they wanted to have something to do with the kids as a family thing. and they went out there. And so, yeah, they still like it. It's just, it's not cheap anymore to do it.
Yeah. Right. Jason, go ahead.
I will also say too, that, you know, before the pandemic, because people want to just get out of the house now, but how cheap really good quality televisions have become and sound systems.
Yeah.
You know, and you can set up like people, a lot of people now will, they'll go to the theater, they'll pay the money if there's like a huge special effects thing, like Marvel blockbuster, you know, thing. But if not, then they probably have a pretty damn good setup at home that they've already dumped money into.
Very true. Pete?
I mean, kind of just going off of what Jason's saying, that's 1,000% true, because the reality of it is, as much as like what Elizabeth said before, like she still likes the experience of going to the movies. Yeah, I like that too, but I only like that for certain kinds of movies. Like I don't have to go see like an art film in a movie theater anymore, because you're not getting an audience that's screaming and cheering. Like if you get the big blockbuster movie that's coming out, the next Avengers, or just like some huge comedy with somebody that, like, you just know it's a surefire hit. Like, yeah, you want to see those in the theaters. But now smaller movies really don't have a purpose anymore in a theater. I guess like the studios might put out their prestige films, you know, in theaters long enough to be able to say, well, they were in the theaters and eligible for awards. But I mean, right now, honestly, if this is not, again, just me saying it. If you look at the analysis of all this stuff, except for the blockbuster films, there's no incentive for people to go to a movie theater right now. And it probably won't be for quite a while.
Well, that just kind of leads me into the final segment. I know we spent a lot of time today talking about the ArcLight, and I just think it was important for all of us to just kind of, you know, pay tribute to it. So my final questions for tonight that I want to end with is, as moviegoers, all of us here on the panel, what would be on your wish list of things that theaters could do to make the movie experience better and also to get more people back into the theaters? So I know we've talked about this before, you know, what does the future of like movie theaters look like post pandemic? So that's why I want to ask all of you, if you could just tell me one or two things that would be on your wish list. Let's start with you, Danny.
One of the things the ArcLight did that I really enjoyed was they limited the number of previews, you know, shown before a movie, because I always have my popcorn, and if you eat the popcorn at AMC during the previews, you're going to be done with the popcorn before the movie starts.
It's 20 minutes, the previews, and then they went up to like 24 minutes.
It's like a full half hour. Like, yeah. I hate being late to the movies and hate missing previews, but I knew I could do it at the AMC because I'm like, the movie's at 7, I'll see you at like 7:35, and that's when the actual movie will start.
And before the preview even, they got like Maria Menounos going, oh wow, check out this clip after AT&T. I don't need that either.
That's a good one, Daddy. I'm going to add that to my wish list.
Because, that and comfortable seating. Not every theaters had the comfortable seats like the ArcLight. Mm-hmm. You know, going back, not to keep bringing it up, but it was just a great experience there.
See, I have to like disagree with you on that. The ArcLight didn't have reclining seats, and that was the only thing I just, you know, I didn't like very much. So, for every theater, is that what you're talking about, or just comfortable, like where they rock back and.
See, the rocking kind of can put you to sleep, you know, so I'm okay with them not rocking, you know, but, you know, some theaters could afford, you know, to just put more comfortable
their seating.
Yeah. Okay.
Elizabeth, what about you?
I was going to say, they should have, if they're going to put the crap in front of the movie before the previews, make it weird local commercials, because that's how my old hometown theaters in Michigan were, where it's like, Bob's Fish and Bait, come on down to Bob's. We've got everything you need. Hooks, worms, line, poles. Now, you know, free guppies for the kids. Come on down. And then it's like, now you're watching Lord of the Rings. Great contrast. Just if they're going to bring back commercials before the previews, they should be like Los Angeles local, or, you know, whatever, localized advertising. No, I think if you don't do full recliner chairs, at least give me a footrest to kick my feet up.
Footrest.
So that I'm upright. I'm not totally falling asleep reclining, but my feet are up. That's nice. I like that. I did have a friend. We saw Dr. Sleep at the AMC with the recliners, and she wasn't really into it. And it was like about halfway through, and like kind of another section of the movie started, and she just went, "All right, I'll see you later," and literally rolled over in her chair and take a freaking nap. So I agree. Don't make them too comfortable, but at least let me kick my feet up. I think I would like them to kind of be, if it's going the way we think and they're not going to be that many and it's going to become an experience, then make it an experience. Like, you know, I like the old William Castle as a famous like theater producer who would like have buzzers and seats for the scary movies or fly ghosts over the screen. Yeah, just like, I want to like do gimmicks again. Like I've said it before,
an experience. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because then you'll feel like it's worth your money. Because it's like, well, not only did I go and see the movie, which was pretty fun, they had someone like in the lobby inviting you in, or you got to, or like even the arc light would have the costumes, or like I got to see the costumes, or something that adds value to just going.
Or
to
like,
movies.
Or like the LCAP where they have a whole full stage number.
Oh, I call it the floor show. That. Yeah. I love the El Capitan floor show. It's my favorite.
I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pete, wish list.
Yeah, kind of strangely enough, going right off of what Elizabeth just said. Before I came to LA, as I've said before, I was in the nightclub business in New York, and I started out in nightclubs around the end of the era of the big club people, like the Studio 54 people and the people that ran some of the biggest clubs in the world. I kind of came on the tail end of that. And when I came into the business, it was very much about the production of a nightclub. It was very much about like, it wasn't just come in, dance, drink, go home. There was events, there were themes, there were all kinds of things. And slowly but surely, that kind of eroded to the point where it just became, if you have enough money to get in, or if you have enough money for a table, you got in no matter what you looked like. You drink, you dance, you go home, and that was it. And I think that that's kind of the way the movie business has become. You know, like Elizabeth was talking about William Castle, who did, you know, like the with his movie The Tingler.
The Tingler.
They put a shocking on the movie 13 Ghosts. He had flying ghosts overhead. Now, I don't imagine they're ever going to do stuff like that in theaters again, because it's just, there's probably too many liabilities. Yeah. But I
that flying ghost hit my child's head, and now he's damaged.
But I do think that you can, like, the one thing I did, like I said, that I liked about the Arclight, and again, I hate to, you know, just like Danny was saying, I don't want to keep going back to this, but the thing I liked about it was that you knew you were in a palace of movies. Like, you understood, mm-hmm. like, when you saw, like, you go around the country, you probably went to the theaters, like, oh, look, it's the jacket from Saving Private Ryan, and 9 times out of 10, no, it probably wasn't. It was probably a prop that they had in the film that nobody ever used. But when you came into the Arclight, if you saw the jacket from Saving Private Ryan, you almost were certain that Tom Hanks wore that in the movie.
Yeah,
because because it was legitimately there. I mean, I so many iconic films, they would have like costumes and props from them in those glass cases when you came in, and that kind of added to the ambiance of it. And sadly, I don't think that's ever going to come back, because I just don't think that I don't think that there's going to be a necessity to it. And I think as we get more and more towards that subscription based service that like the AMCs have and Regal has and MoviePass mm-hmm. started, I think that you're just going to get to the point. Listen, I'm not complaining about it because I've loved the fact that I can just go to see, you know, this like unlimited amount of movies, but I think it cheapens it a little bit too, because now people that probably only went to the movies 3 or 4 times a year are going 3 or 4 times a week. And so it changes that. So I think that they have to find something to make it a special experience again that doesn't exist. Oh, and more 21 and over theaters. So we don't get kids in a lot of screenings, or at least after a certain hour.
I agree. I love that. Yes, add that to my list too. Joe.
How many times were you at the ArcLight and you saw a costume and you said, "I can't believe that actor's that small."
Yeah, that was my mom's. I would bring my mom
oh my
to the
God,
ArcLight.
They're tiny.
I'd bring my mom to the ArcLight. That was her favorite thing. She was like, "Look how small I are. Go stand next to that. You're 5'10". Get over there. Let me see how tall." I knew it.
Like, Scarlett Johansson wears doll clothing. What's the deal with this? No,
it's like not even real. I remember seeing one of Emma Stone's dresses for La La Land because we saw them there as well. And I was like, "Oh my God, she's so tiny!"
Yeah, exactly.
My
yeah.
leg would have fit in that dress.
But it's also that same thing of like, this was in the movie, you knew it, and so you just had that extra connection.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I'm a big cinephile. I would go to the New Beverly and the Egyptian and stuff like that to see old movies that I'd probably seen on TV because I wanted to see that original experience of when it was on there. I remember there used to be a theater at the Fairfax. On Fairfax and Beverly, and they were showing Casablanca in its original aperture, and I went just to see it in the original aperture.
Are you talking about the silent movie theater?
No, that one is up more. This one was on the corner of Fairfax and Beverly. It's been closed for a while now, but when they were showing the original, so I could see it the way it was originally presented. That's something that I like. Mm-hmm. So I'm basically more of a. I don't want anyone kind of fooling around in my movies or screaming or acting like a jerk.
No,
which the ArcLight was great because they would kick those people out. I want really good popcorn. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to, not in all theaters. You could in some of them, but you know, maybe get a beer with my popcorn and then sit down and be able to enjoy it. And part of that enjoyment is, okay, everyone else here is as serious about wanting to enjoy this movie as I am. You know, no one's kicking the back of my chair or things like that and all that. And that's what I want. Again, like Pete said, it was a cathedral to movies in a way. You know, but like I said, I go to the New Beverly. Now, they had the shittiest seats in the world. You know, Quentin at least went and tried to fix them so that at least more of them worked. But they're bad seats. But it was really good popcorn. And it was a movie that, oh, God, you're never going to get to even see it on TV that sometimes they would show, you know. That was my thing, too. It didn't matter that it was grody. It didn't matter that the seat was going to be not comfortable. I want to be able to see it the way it originally was shown. And that's something that's important to me. So that's what I'd like. But I'm a weirdo. So when it comes to this stuff, I'm the minority. Yeah.
So now that we've kind of talked about our wish list, what do you guys think we're actually going to see in the near future changes? You know what I hope to see, but at the same time, I'm like, well, that would be really annoying. But you know, like that paper when you go to the doctor's office, how they change out that like crinkly
on the seats.
Yeah, that's because I've been saying this for years. Every time we would go to the movies, I'm like, ew, it's so gross. I don't know who sat here before me, but now I'm like, are they going to have like, you know, plastic over the seats where they have to remove the plastic after that? I mean, that's what I'm expecting to see. Elizabeth.
Do you mean expecting to see just like overall like or like
overall, like in the movie theater?
And just in the movie theaters themselves. I mean, yeah, I think I don't think they're going to build any new movie theaters, but I think if they started to, I think they'll start to space seats out more. And there's probably like changes in, they used to, the one thing I hated about pre-buying the seats is like, you're like, I don't want to sit right next to this person. I want to sit one over. And it was always like, you can't leave an empty space because what if there's an odd person out on the road? No, you have to buy and sit directly next to these strangers. I think hopefully that ticketing system will go by the wayside and you don't have to sit right next to someone if you don't want to. I'm imagining, and I've seen people say it, like, Netflix or Amazon or somebody's probably going to buy the Cinerama Dome at the least, if not, you know, ArcLight itself. And I think we're going to start to see, you know, like Pete was saying with the blockbusters, probably less and less art movies in major theaters and more just, I think, solely big budget stuff that will bring in a lot of money.
Yeah, I really do hope somebody steps in and buys the Cinerama. That was going to be actually my final question, but let's just talk about it now as well. Pete.
Well, I think that somebody will definitely buy the Cinerama Dome. I can't imagine anybody wanting to buy the ArcLight because it just seems like it would be such an undertaking, you know, and especially because it probably wouldn't make sense to have it open until maybe next year or, you know, like when there's, I mean, it's 14 theaters, Joe, is it?
14? Yeah, 14.
It's 14 theaters, and there's not enough people for 14 theaters, and it's not going to be, regardless of all the vaccinations and everything else, for quite a while, because it's just not going to be 14 movies to go see for a while. But I hate to sound pessimistic, although I'm good at it. but I don't see like there being any grand changes to the way things are, because I think that we're reaching a point where movie theaters are going to become meat markets. It's like, how many people can we get in? How many, you know, how many showings can we get through in the course of a night? And everybody's going to have a subscription service, because if they don't, they're not going to survive. You know, I mean, now there's a, if you go on moviepass.com, they've got a countdown clock because they're coming back in some manner, you know, and Arclight, AMC is already saying that within the next month or so, they're going to reactivate our A-list accounts.
Oh, are they?
Unless we tell them not to. So the subscription services are here to stay. And I think as much as I love it, and trust me, I don't want them to get rid of it, I think that there's just so many people. It's kind of like anybody who's a movie person knows, don't ever go to a movie theater on a Tuesday night, because Tuesday night is budget night and you get all budget people to show up at the theater. Well, now with the subscription services, Tuesday night is every night of the week. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think that you're going to start to see.
Yeah, we used to hate going to the movies on Tuesdays. Remember, Pete?
Yeah.
It was just, it was a nightmare. Joe.
Airline.
I'm worried for Veronica because she likes those reclining seats, but now she's going to sit in the seat and has to look at the button and decide whether she wants to actually touch the button or not.
She's going to just put Saran wrap on before we go.
You know what? You'd be surprised. I've always been a germaphobe. So even then, like every time I would hit the recline, you know, I was like, ooh, I don't know who's touched this. And then I would go to the bathroom and like wash my hands.
You can get, they have little things now where it's like a little, you just, it's like on your key ring and it's a little poker basically. And you can
Pete has one of those. It. Yeah. That you kind of, somebody gave it to him as a gift. My friend Monica gave it to him as a gift.
Yeah.
As a cinephile, I hope and pray. I mean, I'm very lucky that I live in Los Angeles, which is full of cinephiles and people in the industry and stuff like that. I can hope and pray that we will still have boutique theater. Like, I don't think the New Beverly is going away because Quentin Tarantino owns it. He loves movies, and I think that's going to come back. But I think a lot of those smaller kind of boutique movie theaters, are they even going to be around? I mean, and obviously, like I was talking about, there was a $1.75 theater up in North Hollywood. I'm pretty sure that thing's gone. Pretty sure that thing's going to end up becoming apartment buildings. It's tough, you know. But like we're also lucky because, like I said, we're in like Los Angeles. What is somebody in a smaller city or a town or something like that? What's it going to be like for them? Or like a town where it was just one AMC. That handled like five towns and stuff like that and all. So, I mean, that's something else to kind of discuss in the future. How is that going to be going on in the future? I mean, the movie industry is in a really weird place. I mean, it's going to survive, but it's probably going to survive with movies coming into your home more than it's going to be movies in the theater. And again, that's something that I'm going to mourn losing because I love doing that, but that's I think is the reality of it.
Danny.
You're probably also going to see the smell of cleaning products a lot more.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just finding popcorn on the floor, you're going to find wipes. Mm-hmm. You know? Cause I see myself going to the movie theater, but having my wipes, you know, wiping down the armrests, even if I have to spray Lysol on the seat, you know?
Oh yeah.
At least in the beginning, you know, but
yeah.
I usually get to the movie early enough where I'm one of the first people in there, you know, and I always like to sit in the very back just so I know no one's going to sneeze on me. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully the popcorn is good at that, you know, the smell will kind of like deflect from all the, you know, Lysol, but hey, whatever works.
I am excited. I have the vaccine. So my third hand can hold an extra snack. So now I can have popcorn and a drink and maybe candy.
On that note, we're going to end tonight's show. Thank you so much for joining us. That's our show for tonight, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Bye, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe. Bye.
Save the Cinerama Dome.
You know, I know, like, Pete and